All for the announcements on the one case we have, CR-17-803, Michael Joseph Tillman versus State of Texas. Y'all want to make your announcements, please?
Paul Evans on behalf of Mr. Tillman.
Morning, Mr. Evans.
Wes Mau on behalf of State of Texas, we're ready.
Good morning, Mr. Mau. I understand that each of you have had the chance to get with the clerk and set your time for rebuttal. You're going to reserve 5 minutes? All righty. As you may know, we have a lighting system. When the yellow light comes on, you have 2 minutes remaining. When the red light comes on, you have no time remaining. If you would, look to the court for permission to continue, and we will try to accommodate you there. The proceedings today are being audio recorded, and the recording will be available on the court's website, probably be up within 24 hours, and so you can avail yourself of that. By way of housekeeping, I don't think we have anyone in the crowd, but if they did, I would ask them to turn their cell phones off. So Mr. Mau, if you'd turn your cell phone off so you don't disturb Mr. Evans during his argument, we would appreciate it. With that, Mr. Evans, the floor is yours.
Thank you, sir.
I did not know, I was not aware until I took on this case how little regulation there is in Texas law regarding hotels. There's very, very little. There is absolutely nothing on evictions from hotels. For instance, by way of comparison, the state of Missouri has a provision in place that addresses evictions, and I'll get to that later in the course of my argument.
So does that leave us as it being a matter of contract?
Well, getting to that, there is no contract in this instant case. As it was developed on the record, there is simply a, I think the phrase that was used at one point by the hotel manager was basically swipe and go. The parties pay for their room. There's no formal agreement that they sign. I'll put it to you this way. I've been practicing 14 years, just by way of analogy. I do a written contract with each one of my hired clients, and it spells out how much they're going to pay me, what I'm going to do for them, when they're going to pay me. I may need to refer to those occasionally just to see, okay, how much did I charge this guy? Has he paid me yet? Every 5 years or so, I need to whip it out and say, okay, there's a problem here. We've got a problem. You and I have a disagreement over what I've agreed to do here. Now, at one point in the state's argument, the state's brief, it's these young men's fault that they did not get notice that they're being evicted because of their actions. Well, a simple remedy to this is a contract that says, hey, under these circumstances, we can kick you out. No questions asked. We can get law enforcement assistance to do that. By signing this, by taking on this agreement, you're agreeing to that in advance.
Mr. Evans,
yes.
Doesn't the hotel have a right to evict a guest if they're committing a crime?
The thing is, without further guidance, of course they can. Now, part of the premise of the state's argument, and part of this comes from Officer Duckworth's testimony, is the premise that they didn't make entry into the room until they had crossed the threshold by physically entering the room. My argument is under the assumption that the entrance into the room starts when that police officer pushes that door open, just as I'm gesturing with my hand against an imaginary door. That is the entry. It's the same way an entry would be made for the sake of gauging the sufficiency of a burglary conviction.
Remind me, did the manager swipe a key?
The manager swiped a key. The officer said, we can't go in there, but you can open the door. So the manager swipes the key, and the officer pushes the door open. It's all very clear on the exhibit that's in evidence. Now, if the officer is not under any authority that he can legally enter the room by crossing the threshold physically, how is it that he can push the door open? Now, if this is a different set of circumstances where the hotel manager had flung the door wide open, as would be his right, I think, under the circumstances, absent any clear authority on how to affect a hotel eviction, I think that would be absolutely in his right. And if something were seen in plain view at that point by the officer standing behind him, Mr. Tillman doesn't have a leg to stand on. But that's not the situation we have here.
So you think that if it would have been the hotel manager with maybe the police standing by, but the hotel manager is the one who opens the door, opens it wide, crosses the threshold, then there wouldn't be a Fourth Amendment issue?
I don't think there would be a Fourth Amendment issue so long as the officers proceed under some sort of authority by which they can do so. If they don't see things in plain view, well, there's no authority for them to enter unless there's consent given. Or exigent circumstances arise after that door gets flung open. Or they could have simply gotten a warrant. This all happens in a very quick succession of events.
Does the nature of the case change if we take out the word hotel and insert apartment?
Drastically, because then you've got a completely different set of well-developed guidelines and statutory authority to go by.
The eviction process.
I'm yes.
We don't have some case law that analogizes your expectation of privacy in a hotel room to be similar to that of a residence during the time that you're occupying
the
hotel. Isn't there a line of cases talking about how your expectation of privacy in a hotel room is comparable to that of which you would have in an apartment or home during your time of occupancy?
Yes, and I don't think that accrues to my detriment. The case that the state cites as its primary authority, U.S. v. Peoples, it's important to note that the basis of the trial court's decision to deny the motion to suppress is that there is a statute in place in Missouri that authorizes the hotel specifically to evict when there's criminal activity afoot. And another part and parcel of the people's argument is that the defense counsel in that case never tried to frame the entry as a search. As I've maintained in my brief, any entry, any physical entry into that dwelling, whether it's an apartment or a home, any entry constitutes a search just by the virtue of the physical entry. That's established case law.
But Mr. Evans, you agree that when the officers open the door, they don't immediately walk into the hotel room?
They don't immediately, but it's quickly enough that it's as close as it could be to immediately. I'll put it to you that way. I think that's fair to say.
And when, based on the testimony from the record and the evidence that was presented, when the officers open the door, are you saying that they were intent on arresting these people for marijuana use or drug use, or that they were effectuating an eviction?
Well, I don't think that they can. I'll put it to you this way. I'm not saying that it's their intent at that time to arrest them. However, you cannot divorce the notion that they are trying to help an eviction from the fact that they are making an entry into that space when they're effecting that eviction. And like I said, that entry is not authorized. If they're not authorized to walk in, if the officers aren't authorized to walk in, they're not authorized to push the door open either. The hotel manager, he's got a different basis, I guess you might say, on which he could enter the room after the management had not been able to get across to them that they were trying to get evicted.
So is it your position that for an eviction that the hotel man, that the officers would never have, it would never be permissible for them to open the door under any set of circumstances?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that under these circumstances, under the specific circumstances of this case, I'm not going to go that far. No.
Can I ask you a question?
Please.
Change you a little bit. Do you believe that the smell of marijuana at a prior time by the hotel staff prior to the police getting there is sufficient to establish probable cause for the officers to believe that there was a crime that was being committed?
No, I do not. I'm glad you asked that question. The state's brief mentioned that I had conceded that there was, that that was probable cause. I never conceded that. I never stated that in my brief. I did in my brief say at one point, assuming arguendo, that there was probable cause. In the context of a discussion of exigent circumstances, I said, assuming arguendo, there's probable cause.
Well, is that French? Arguendo?
It's Latin.
Nah.
I knew that degree from undergrad would come in handy.
Do we have on the record, or do we know how much time approximately elapsed between the management smelling marijuana and the officers arriving at the hotel?
No, because the smell had occurred at one point earlier in the day. A prior shift had tried to address the situation. The gentleman had left, or they couldn't make contact, and then I guess it dissipated, so they blew it off for a while, and then they smelled it again, and they figured that they needed to address it. I don't think it was very long after the second time.
Okay.
And so, just to close, the officers never smelled marijuana. It was the hotel manager, correct?
I believe so, yes.
Would we have a different case if one of the officers had smelled marijuana?
I don't believe, and I might stand corrected looking back at the record, but I don't believe that the officer smelled marijuana.
But if they had, would we have a different outcome here?
Not necessarily, because how do we conclude that it's that room that it's coming from?
But if they had and they could reasonably identify that it was emanating from that room, do they then have the right to enter?
Not without a warrant.
Unless there's exigency.
Unless there's a, no, correct. And none of the potential exigent circumstances in this case arise, none of the even potential ones arise until after they are already inside that room, after that illegal entry has been made.
So can we go back to notice again?
Yes.
Because it sounds to me that you are, I don't know if conceding is a good word, but you're saying that the hotel room had, I mean, the hotel manager had a right to open the door and possibly, you know, go over the threshold and said, you're being evicted. Regardless, your brief makes a big deal about they were not given notice. And one of my questions I was prepared to ask is, well, you know, this is a criminal case as opposed to a civil case, why do you believe they need to give notice? So am I correct in understanding that you have agreed that for the hotel management, they would have had the right to open the door, evict them, without any other notice?
I would suggest that you take a look at the case cited by the state in their brief, U.S., I think it's U.S., the Bass, that, and the it's one of those where the state cites it in support of its argument, but when you take a look at the opinion, it really supports Mr. Tillman's, where basically the right to privacy is extinguished once the eviction has taken place, not when it's in the works, not when, and there's a specific, there's mention in the opinion, in the Bass opinion, where, hey, it's not good enough if the motel manager just thinks that this is a bad guest and it's time for them to go. You have to actually take some steps towards making that eviction and giving some sort of notice.
Okay, so I'm not sure what the answer to my question is. So do you think that the hotel manager had a right without having, so far they were not able to give him notice under our set of circumstances, do you think they had a right to go ahead and open the door and tell them they were evicted or not?
I think that the hotel manager had that right.
Okay, and so.
But the hotel manager is not an agent of the state. He doesn't implicate those Fourth Amendment concerns.
Okay, and that's where I had I thought had explained my question, which was then, I don't need to ask you, well, how much notice is notice, how much notice that they need to give them. Your position is hotel manager could have done any of this regardless that they had not had notice before. Not the...
Under the circumstances, you know, since they said that they had tried to make contact with them, I don't think that's unreasonable.
Okay.
Absent some hotel policy that says the hotel cannot do that, and absent a hotel policy or statutory policy that delineates what can and cannot be done.
I think I just saw the lobby group from the Hotel Motel Association walking over to the Capitol.
And, you know, I wonder if they keep statistics on how many hotel evictions take place, because there must be hundreds across the state every day. And yet, as we see by the dearth of any statutory authority, few of them end up in these sort of disputes where they would come up to some place like this. I see the red light is on, so I will save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Morning, Mr. Mao.
Good morning, Chief Justice and Justices. I think the panel has hit on the point that I was going to make today already, which is if the manager of the hotel had the authority to enter the room to effect this eviction, as appellant has apparently conceded at this point, then asking the police officers to do that on his behalf gives the police officers every authority to enter the hotel room just as if they were the manager. And once they enter the hotel room, anything they observe in plain view, and I've not heard any dispute that the evidence found wasn't in plain view, then they are in a place where they are authorized to be. They are seeing evidence of contraband that is obviously contraband, and the plain view doctrine applies. If the manager, in other words, could open the door, then his simply unlocking the door and asking the police to do it was an authorized act by the police. There is no difference under the law between the police officers acting at the behest of the manager and the manager doing that on his own and then telling the police officers what he had seen. Excuse me. The cases that we've cited in the brief and that have been mentioned by appellant today relating to eviction all stand for the proposition that this eviction was appropriate and could have been appropriate even under circumstances, in my view, more favorable to the defense in this case. For example, in United States versus Peoples, the police approached the manager and said, hey, that guy in that room is committed another crime off these premises. We'd like to make contact with him. And the manager said, well, if he's a criminal, I don't want him in my hotel. Take this key and evict him. And the manager didn't even go to the hotel room. The manager didn't even make the decision to evict until the police had already arrived and told him something had nothing to do with violations of a hotel policy or an ongoing crime in the hotel. And the federal courts held that Stoner does not apply where the hotel manager has provided that key and asked the police to effect that eviction.
Now, I'm sorry, I thought in that case, hadn't the occupancy already expired?
No, not in that case, at least not. I don't have the case in front of me, but as I recall, there was no ongoing crime, no hotel policy violations, and the occupancy had not expired.
Which case was that?
This was United States v. Peoples, okay. 854 F3rd 993. It's cited in the brief as well. There are a number of other cases cited in the briefs where the occupancy had expired. And the point of those cases is that if the manager had the authority to kick them out at that point because their occupancy had expired, that is essentially the same situation as where the manager is determined to evict them. If the manager has the right to evict them, the occupant of the room is in the same position as he would be if his occupancy had expired.
I think in most of the cases, and definitely the ones that were the occupancy had expired, I think the courts have decided you have a right to evict, but there is no right to there's no privacy expectation at that point. If you're past your term, I don't think anybody can honestly say, well, you know, I had a right to privacy or my expectation of privacy since I was supposed to have already left. Do you not think that that is a big difference between those cases and what we have here, where there was no occupancy had not expired?
I think there is a distinction there. I'm not sure it makes a difference legally, because in a case where my occupancy has expired, obviously at that point the manager could come in at any time for at his whim, and I have nothing to say about it because I no longer have any rights to that property. My contract has expired. In a situation where the management has determined to evict me, my subjective expectation of privacy may still exist. I may still believe that I have a right to privacy in that room because my occupancy has not expired. However, if I have done something to justify an eviction, then the fact that I am to be evicted means that society is no longer prepared to recognize my subjective expectation as reasonable. That's the reason for citing these civil cases, is that the civil courts are essentially what establishes what society's expectations are in these non-criminal contexts. In the context of these evictions of hotels, if the civil courts are saying that you have no right to expect either notice or that the reasonable force may be used to evict you, those sorts of things, that's what society is prepared to accept as a reasonable proposition in those situations. Here, the manager had attempted to make contact with these individuals. They had not come to the door. Their explanation that they couldn't hear was not supported by the evidence. The police testified they were able to hear whispering inside the room while the occupants are claiming they are playing the guitar so loudly that they couldn't hear the knocking at the door. The bottom line here, I think, is that if the court were to find that this eviction process that was ongoing here, was somehow improper, was somehow unlawful, then that's essentially saying that the hotel manager would have to get a warrant in order to open the door and tell the occupants that they have to leave. And there's never been any precedent for that. And in fact, the precedents are to the contrary, that there is no notice required. There's no legal process required for them to go through.
But what happens if, you know, my neighbor in the hotel, who's upset at me because I'm being too loud or, you know, have kids, screaming kids or whatever, calls and says, hey, I'm smelling marijuana coming in from that room right now. I mean, shouldn't I? And I'm not, let's just assume I'm not smoking marijuana. Do I not still, whether it's subjective or not, still have a right to privacy, an expectation of privacy, that they're, you know, hotel manager's not going to just open my door and say, well, you know, we thought you were committing a crime?
To a certain extent, but what I ask the court to remember too is that the hotel management is not under the same strictures as law enforcement would be to make an unwarranted entry without a warrant, a warrantless entry. The reason I say that way is, if, for example, the police were to contact the neighboring occupant and say, hey, I understand that you've reported you smelled marijuana, and that occupant is identified, that occupant is credible, says I've smelled marijuana, that establishes probable cause that there's a crime going on in there. Now, as both sides have put in their briefs, that wouldn't necessarily give the police the authority to simply go in without a warrant. They could go get a warrant because they have probable cause and then enter the room. The manager of the hotel, however, is not subject to some sort of probable cause standard for determining when an eviction is appropriate. If the manager believes, and certainly if they have probable cause to believe that a crime is being committed in one of their hotel rooms, they would certainly have the right to evict, and they probably have the right to evict under much lesser circumstances than what the police would need to get a warrant.
Well, Missouri and Minnesota both have laws that say in a hotel, if you're in a hotel room and you commit a crime, then management has the right to evict you. Are you aware of anything in Texas that is comparable to those laws?
Texas has no law that authorizes or forbids managers of hotels from evicting people under those circumstances. And because the law doesn't forbid it, the manager certainly has that right to do that.
What is the legal basis for your argument where you essentially say if the manager has the authority, then he has the ability to assign that authority over to the police?
Yes. The police are authorized to act under the apparent authority of a person who has that apparent authority over that space. For example, in a house, if I were to come and knock on your door and say, hey, would you mind letting me in and search the house? And you say yes, even though another occupant of the house, your wife, your son, whoever, says, I don't want the police coming in, the police are going to be allowed to go in despite the fact that that other person would would reject that because you have apparent authority to do that.
So it's an apparent authority type argument that you rely on?
Yes. And in this case, it's actual authority. It's not just apparent authority. The hotel manager has, under the cases we've cited, the authority to evict these occupants. And if he has the authority to evict these occupants, he has the right to call upon the police to assist him in that. And if the police choose to do that, then they have the right to exercise the same authority that the hotel manager would.
But an owner doesn't have necessarily that apparent or expressed authority. If I'm renting a house to somebody, I don't have the authority just because it's my property to tell the police, hey, I give you permission to go ahead and go into my property and search it.
That would be a different circumstance because you would have that. That would be a landlord-tenant situation where you could not evict those individuals without going through the processes that are set out in the law. The Texas law doesn't.
About, at least in my mind, we're talking about two different things. I thought Justice Rowe's question is what gives the authority that you think the manager has to tell the, you know, if the manager has the right to open that door and evict them or tell them they have to leave, where do you have the authority to transfer that to the police? And I thought you were, the answer to that was, just like if I'm living in the place and I say I'm the owner and I give them, regardless of whether there's another tenant in there, right to search the property. So I see it two different things, not so much the right to evict, but what authority are you citing to, or do you have any that states if the manager can evict, the manager can use, I guess, like an agent, the officers as their agent in evicting?
Well, that's the exact situation that happened in U.S. v. Peoples, which is cited in the brief. It's the exact situation that happened in U.S. v. Tolbert. Volkel versus State, which is Court of Criminal Appeals from 1986, also cited in the brief. All these cases are cited in the briefs. Bertucca v. Martinez, which is not a criminal case. Bertucca v. Martinez is a case where there was no crime ongoing, and the management summoned the police to break down the door and go in and remove the person. And the courts, that was, not, like I said, it was not a criminal case. It wasn't so much about the police entry and discovery of evidence. The courts essentially said that that was not a forcible detainer. That was the manager's right to have the police do that to get that person out of that room as an eviction.
Wasn't there a line of cases giving you sort of a right to expectation of privacy within a hotel in a rental situation? And how would that not be eviscerated if all it takes is a manager or someone sending the police to the batter ham?
That is essentially what the Stoner case says. And all of these cases that I've cited about police being summoned to evict a person and then finding evidence or not finding evidence are all cases that discuss Stoner in that context and say that in the context of an eviction, Stoner does not prevent the police from entering under a Fourth Amendment analysis.
Let's set aside the landlord-tenant argument for a second. And I'd like to know what the state's position is where is the line finally when there's probable cause plus exigency to get to be walking around and cross the threshold and be in the room? So I know you said just earlier the smell of marijuana alone, it sounds like both the state and the defense agrees that would not have been enough.
That would be probable cause.
Right.
To believe that there is a crime occurring.
But not exigency to enter the room.
Right.
So where's the tipping point? Because you point to factors, and I want to try to find out where that line is.
The smell of marijuana is kind of the threshold issue of whether or not we even believe there's a crime ongoing.
Right.
There is. So taking that as a given, because we smell the marijuana, the police can't enter unless they have some exception to the warrant requirement, whether that be consent as against circumstances or something else. The exigent circumstances argument is essentially set out for us in a number of cases, again cited in the brief. I'll point the court specifically to Effler versus State, 115 Southwest 3rd, 696, which officers responded to a complaint of odors in a residence. They smelled what they believed to be odors consistent with meth manufacture. They heard people moving around inside. The defendant in that case answered the door and then ran off into the room. Officers pursued without a warrant and caught him pouring evidence into the sink and found some other evidence subsequent to that. In Pair versus State, which is 184 Southwest 3rd, 329, I don't believe this is cited in the brief. This is a case out of Fort Worth in 2006. Officer at the front door smells what he believes to be ether associated with methamphetamine manufacturer. He hears movement around inside the house, possibly people running or hiding. He is aware that another officer has conducted surveillance of the residence and seen some other things that were consistent with meth manufacturer going on inside the residence. In that case, the court held that there was probable cause to support a warrantless entry, and the exigency of preserving evidence justified the entry and holding the scene for the warrant. Now, in this case, it's obviously very similar circumstances. We have noises going on inside, the police hear whispering, they've been told and possibly smelled themselves. The record's unclear on that. The officer, I think, testified that he may or may not have smelled marijuana. He couldn't quite remember at the time.
Didn't all the officers say they didn't remember smelling marijuana?
Something like along those lines. And so they believe there's marijuana in the room. They hear the whispering. They're not responding to the knocks on the door. When the manager opens the door and the police officer pushes the door open, they hear the toilet flushing. These are almost identical facts to Effler, very similar to Pear. And in those situations, if the officers could have entered the hotel room to then hold it and get a warrant, anything they could have seen in plain view at that time would have been admissible in court because they would have been somewhere where they were authorized to be. So that's obviously our second argument, is that the exigency did exist in this case and the officers could have entered even without the manager's assistance, although they obviously would have had to break the door down if the manager hadn't opened it for them.
So what's the exigency before they opened the door? Because it's clear from the tape that the officer tells the manager, we can't open the door, but you can.
I would suggest that the officer's understanding of his authority to enter is not binding on the court. The officer's understanding, I think, is inaccurate in that sense. I believe once they have attempted to enter, or attempted to get the attention of the people inside, they've heard whispering, they believe they're being ignored, they've announced themselves as the police, they continue to hear the noises inside, that there are occupants there, they know that the marijuana smell has been observed, even if they haven't smelled
earlier
it themselves, right? Then they would have an exigency there to believe that that evidence may be about to be destroyed. That's a very similar set of facts to the Effler decision. The only real difference between Effler in this case is that somebody did actually come to the door and then turned around and ran away when he, I guess, saw that it was the police. But in that case, they didn't have the eviction situation as we do here. That was presumably a home that the police would have had to get a warrant and could not have relied on the manager's authority to enter in any circumstance.
Why couldn't they have gotten a warrant in this case even before they went? I mean, they waited a long time for a backup officer.
I don't know that they couldn't have gotten a warrant. I assume they could have gotten a warrant, that with credible evidence that the smell of marijuana was coming from that room, they probably could have obtained a warrant. The fact that the manager was asking them to evict these people right now was, I think, why they didn't do that, because they were going to assist in the eviction. In fact, when they entered the room, they didn't immediately begin to search for narcotics. What they did was they told these guys, you're going to have to leave, pack up your stuff, and let's go. And as they were watching them do that, they looked around, and as I think an officer naturally would, and they saw in plain view the drugs. One other point I wanted to point out was, Justice Toronto, Chief Justice Rose, I think you mentioned, what would be the difference between a hotel and an apartment? And would that be a drastic difference? I think it would be a drastic difference if in the apartment situation, there had not been the procedures under the law followed for a proper eviction. In other words, if we were using kind of the hotel style eviction procedures to evict somebody from an apartment, that would be unlawful because we have special rules for evicting somebody from the apartment. If, however, a apartment manager had followed those procedures and the eviction was proper and the apartment manager asked the police officers, go into that apartment, kick those people out because I have obtained a proper eviction, then we'd be in exactly the same situation. If the eviction is proper, then the police entry at the behest of the manager is proper. They are in a position where they are authorized to be, and anything that they see that is obvious contraband is going to be seizable and admissible in court.
So, Mr. Miles, is it your position that since there's no law on Texas either way for hotel evictions, that basically a hotel could evict someone really for anything?
I do think there's probably a reasonableness categorization there that we would have to look at in a context of a apparently unreasonable eviction. In this case, I don't think that it was unreasonable. With the smell of marijuana, the ignored attempts to contact the occupants, to tell them that they were being evicted, asking the police to show up and enter and evict these people who are ignoring efforts by the hotel managers to notify them that they're being kicked out, it's not unreasonable. And I think if the court were to hold it to be unreasonable, it'd be essentially the same thing as saying to evict somebody from a hotel, hotel management is going to have to get a warrant. And the cases are clear that there is no legal process required for that, for evicting somebody from a hotel. I appreciate the attention of the court. I look forward to the court's ruling. And I thank you on behalf of the state.
Thank you, Mr. Powell. Mr. Evans.
Thank you, Your Honor. Oh, no problem. Stoner, the aptly named Stoner in this occasion, it spells out that the hotel manager cannot give consent to the officer to enter. There's nothing that says the officers can't assist in an eviction. They can show up, they can provide assistance, they can provide backup, they can respond in the event that some exigent circumstances arise during the process of the eviction. But there's no authority for that officer to open that door with his hand, no more than it is for him to enter.
But Mr. Evans, in
yes.
Stoner, the hotel manager didn't say, oh, this person's being, you know, you suspect him of committing robbery, go ahead and evict him for me, here's the key. I mean, how do you resolve the difference in Stoner with the appellant not being evicted in Stoner?
Well,
it's just a search of his room while he was out of the hotel.
The same underlying principle is gonna apply. If there's no provision in place, whether statutory or whether by contract with the hotel, that would give the tenant reason to think that this could happen if certain events occur, then there would be no authority for the officer to open the door, because we've got on the one hand a civil concern versus constitutional concerns, and just because these civil matters are not spelled out by authorities as well and as fully as they may be in other jurisdictions doesn't mean that my client sacrifices his Fourth Amendment rights. With regards to the manager opening the door, let's say if he opened the door under his own authority. Now, I might be accused of trying to have it both ways, but as I sit here thinking about it, well, what if he did that? What if the hotel manager enters the door under the circumstances we have here, and the tenant of the hotel room comes to me and says, hey, I want to sue that guy. He entered my room too early. He might have a plausible argument there. I don't think he's going to collect much in damages, his fraction of one night's stay, perhaps. But that doesn't mean that the officer has a right to accept the manager's permission to enter the room, because entering the room is a search in and of itself, whether it's by an inch or whether it's by 8 feet. And again, I'd point to U.S. v. Bass, the opinion cited by the state in the state's brief. This is an instance where the gentleman is under arrest, I believe, before his term of occupancy expires. And he is taken away, and the hotel management says to the police before the term of occupancy has expired, please go in his room and check it out and just make sure there's nothing there. We don't want to be in there. And this is a case where the lower court upheld the suppression, saying there was no authority for the officers to go in there because the gentleman did not know that he had been evicted from the room. Just the fact that he had been arrested didn't mean that he knew that he had been evicted from the room. And one of the cases cited by the United States in support of its argument, the court distinguished by saying, hey, in that Allen case, the guy had noticed he had been evicted. The door had been deadbolted. He had been told it's over. You're no longer guest. I don't think that we can't say that their constitutional rights don't evaporate the second that the hotel management has decided to evict. There has to be some sort of notice given so that the person knows that their expectations of privacy are now over, bottom line. Unless there's anything else, thank you for your time.
Thank you,
Mr. Evans. Thank you, Mr. Mao. Interesting case. The case will be submitted. The court will stand in recess.
All rise.